Welcome back to Deep Thoughts. Today we're going to talk about a subject that's really important. And I'm not, if this has ever been an annoying concept for you, then this video is for you. If you're tired of it, if you're tired of hearing people tell you how offended they are, this episode's for you. But we need to increase the communication understanding of what this bullshit tactic's all about so that we can start to extinguish it in the minds of people. And it's a subject of being offended. Being offended, in my opinion, is a bullshit emotion. It doesn't really exist. It's a mezzanine of emotion between being angry and not being angry. And it's where people extort behaviors out of other people. That's the game. Some people are stupid and they just learn it. And other people know exactly what they're doing. They become extremely annoying. And they use it and they manipulate it. There's comedians that have gotten on stage and they do great one-hour bits about being offended. But I think we need to understand it. We need to understand what the mechanics are, because it's actually fairly primitive. We need to make sure that we don't walk around being the same exact way, but we're baited into behaving this way because we do feel anger. And either you're content with life or you're angry with life. And offended is one step beyond being angry. Being offended is when you demand a prize out of the other person. Now, we all believe in apologies, right? Apologies do amazing things. Apologies, if you make someone angry, is what's really going on here. If you make someone angry, you apologize to them and they accept your apology. That's really as far as it needs to go. But what happens in the modern world? The modern world, you make someone angry. They say they're offended. And what they're actually telling you, this is what I'm going to suggest to you from the rest of your days. Think about this. When someone says they're offended, they want more than an apology. They want a prize. They want a back rub. They want dinner. They want something. They want you to give them 40 acres and a mule. They want you to let them into your country. They want a prize. They want to just walk in a room and be treated special. But then they want to be treated equal. They want to force their way into your businesses. If you're a meat-serving company, they want you to serve a vegetarian option. If they're a vegetarian place, they want you to serve a meat option. If your religion prohibits you from engaging in certain activities, then they're going to try to force you to go against your principles. There's a prize at the end of being offended. And I've said a couple times on the show, out of 140 episodes, adults don't get offended. Children do. But we need to stop children from being offended. You're either angry or you're not. Now let's take the anger side of the equation. Someone has done something, said something to you, treated you a particular way, disrespected you, and you're angry. What you want to have happen is the behavior to stop. Perhaps, at the most, you want someone to acknowledge that they rubbed you wrong, that there's an apology. And then you accept the apology. And we're going to get into apologies because they are an amazing enema of bad behavior. It's good for both sides of the fence. But now, what do I always say on this show? I say that intent is sin, nothing else. If someone does something to you that angers you, but they didn't mean to, they're simply being ignorant about what is making you angry. They don't know that it makes you angry. Maybe that's because they're selfish, that they did this and they didn't take into account how you would be affected by what they did. And so it angered you. It hurt your feelings. That someone didn't think of you empathetically, right? But instead of acknowledging the fiber of what's going on there, we run to the prize, because it's like when you hear the story about someone slipping and falling at a convenience store and they get a $50,000 settlement or $100,000 settlement. some of us, before we got educated about life and grew up, we were excited about that idea. Oh my God, I just need to find a slick spot and a tile at a convenience store and fall over and then pretend to be really injured. Even though you are injured, you're not injured that much. And try to extort money out of the place. They should be compensated for their ignorance, of course. And that's not exactly the same thing as being offended. But the idea is some folks are what I call habitual victims. And what that means is that they've thinned out their skin. They get offended at every turn. Some of them are just plain genetically weak, mentally weak. And so it's very simple. They were born with thin skin. No one ever slapped them around and roughed them up in one way or another, right? Life never really demanded much from them. They live with their parents their whole life, whatever the case might be. Someone spoon-fed them money. And so as far as what life actually demands out of an individual, they never experience it. And so they easily get affected by things. Now, there are a lot of other emotions that are involved with this. There's fear. There's being scared, right? Someone just scares the shit out of you. And then you can sort of not be offended, but you sort of want the same prize. Someone does owe you an apology if they scared you and it was legitimate. You weren't being weak. Someone freaked you out. I don't mean boo scare. I mean just they created a scenario that made you feel like you were in peril. So the purpose of this episode is to distinguish the two differences of behavior. The one that we have to be accountable for, and the one that we need to abolish because it is tearing society apart. You talk about the divide. Anyone who subscribes to a constant act of being offended, right? We have a person running for president, and her entire platform is about being offended. We have another guy running for president that the only hatred on that guy is that he offends. For those of us that have run businesses and dealt with highly successful individuals, we know that's the way the game is played. And for the same reason you don't take a soccer mom and make her the CEO of a massive corporation is the same reason why you wouldn't elect one person over this other person. This country is a gigantic business. How dare we run it like one, right? So for me, there is a moment in time when something happens where you would traditionally use the word offended. I was offended. But let's talk about some very easy methods of being traditionally what we call offended. Now, I'm going to suggest that every single moment I say this, all we're really talking about is being angry, being pissed off. And it's almost as if it's an anger by which I feel like the other person, talking for myself, I feel like the other person should be stopped from making me angry. And then the offense thing comes up as a paradigm to say, I'm encapsulating your behavior so I can show it to other people, exhibition in front of other people so that you get ceremoniously rejected for your behavior. And then society itself will apply pressure to you to stop that behavior. Therefore, I don't have to run into your circle of bad behavior, bad intent. And we've cured the world. Look how offense works great. But something happens to you and it pisses you off. One way or the other. Someone goes, boo. Someone yells at you. But what are the really common ones? The easiest one is an accusation of racism, right? Someone uses a slur. Doesn't matter what race you are, they use the word that is not allowed to be used and shouldn't be used in any way, shape, or form to describe your race. Every slurred word is a very interesting thing when it comes to racism. In racism, a slang word is always pointed at and aimed at the intellectual capacity and integrity of that person. Right? It means you're dumb. It means you're inferior. Whatever word it is, just think about it. For whatever race you're in, if someone uses a word against you, it's a slanderous word towards the very fabric of your being. Now, you might say, well, that is proof, man, that I have been offended. Well, let's just pull back and say you were disrespected, and that made you angry. And you can call it offending if you want. You can be offended. But now what happens when the timeline of reality here. There's a finite moment in time where someone did a combination of things or a thing to you by which anger and disrespect was felt. What you really need is an apology from that person. A psychological acknowledgement of what happened. You want to hear words that itemizes what they've done to you. You want them to prove that they understand what they did to you, which should not be repeated to you, right? Such that later in life, you never bump into that again, because that was an unpleasant feeling for you. Now, the thing is if somebody calls you a name, a racial slur, what can you really get out of them if you went to the offended model of being a victim? There's always compensation for a victim in most cases, right? Well, what could a person of race A give to race B merely by saying something horrible to them? Pretty much just an apology, right? That's all they can do is say, I'm sorry I was so racist that I was generalizing your pigment average. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating that they will scar you if you let it scar you. You will actually validate it in your mind what they said about you. And now you got a scar, something that needs to heal. Maybe you have scar tissue that never actually goes away. And the more people that use that one word against you, geez, it just builds up this thing inside your chest. Just like, God, is this what I really am? I mean, I don't know. I keep saying it. And if, you know, repetition is the best way to brainwash a human being, I keep getting called this word. Are we really this way? Are we really not the way I think we were or are? And the answer is, of course not. Of course you're not that way. Only you would ever make yourself one way or the other anyway. Wouldn't matter what everyone else is doing. But what happens in a relationship? Your spouse makes you angry. Your spouse disrespects you. Your spouse does not engage a level of empathy that you believe is the bare minimum empathy to consider you in a decision, to consider you in a time management. But what happens on television? What happens in movies? What happens in general conversation? There are memes about this on the internet. If someone in a relationship offends the other person, oh my God, there are possessions that must be acquired and passed to the other person such that, you know, you've basically bought off the offense. Now, changing your behavior and behaving differently is really what is needed. If you compromise the integrity of your relationship in any way, shape, or form, you obviously need to apologize, heartfelt, and I will explain how to say a really good apology and the benefits thereof. But if your person, if your significant other can be bought off, especially with possessions, right? Was Kobe Bryant cheated on his wife in Colorado with some maid, and he bought his wife a big giant rock that she immediately photographed and was on TMZ.com. Wow. So you can be bought off. Is that what it is? I mean, anyone should make their own decision about whether or not they can be bought off for infidelity. But to publish it is just nuts, in my opinion. But the problem with being offended is that it is an imaginary force in the universe. It's an imaginary combination of real emotions. Yeah, there was the old saying that try. There's no such thing as try. There's only do or don't. And I would say that being offended, unfortunately, because it doesn't really exist, it's an apparatus to extort emotion and extort possessions out of people and behaviors out of people. You could have a very small offense, but the more you become addicted to the prize mechanism after that anger is that you can't gauge yourself after a while. I've seen this happen a million times. I've seen couples where it's typically the wife, and no offense, ladies. I've seen a couple bitchy boys do this too. But the guys were stupid. This is why this really goes one way. Yeah, we have to learn how to behave around women. I watch this happen all the time. Depends on how you're raised. We don't raise, you know, men anymore. We raise little boys, and the boys have to then make themselves men these days in most cases. If you're lucky to have a father that made you a man, then you won the jackpot. So you ladies do have to raise your husbands. We understand. But I've seen them where they get utterly addicted. I've even seen a woman make plans to be offended so that she could get X, Y, and Z in her house to get the husband to do certain things. To take a single event that has been well compensated and continually bring it up to the point where there's always more price to pay. You know, if you commit an egregious sin against your spouse, and there's not going to be a way to fully restore the trust in that relationship, I'm going to tell you, you can waste decades trying to remanufacture that trust. Because at some point, there's just a point when you break the thing that cannot be broke and put back together, and that's trust. I've experienced this myself, right? So either you have to wake up every morning and swallow the lack of trust that you actually have and pretend like you have trust, which depending on who you are as an individual will be okay. Possible or will be impossible to do. But now here's the thing. There's some of us in the world that wound easy and heal fast. I could definitely say there's probably some categories in my life where that is the case. I wound easy, but I heal super fast. And in my world, it's all about accomplishing the most I can accomplish in the time that I have on this planet. So sitting around like a pussy, wallowing in self-pity and, offense and all this other stuff. I expect a child to do that. I do, because they don't understand. But the child even needs a parent that steps in and says, look, I understand how you feel. This was definitely unpleasant, wasn't it? Yeah, okay. Well, the only thing we can do in life is to understand what happened, ask for an apology, hope the apology actually has some integrity to it and seems to describe what actually took place. And sometimes apologies are going to be great and heartfelt and deep, and other times apologies are going to suck. But you can't let someone else steal your life from you, so we got to move on. If someone continually makes you angry, then we need to either not hang out with them or not engage them as much if we do have to hang out with them. And unfortunately, family is one of those things you can't escape sometimes, right? Now, my style is go right up to someone's face and tell them exactly what they're doing wrong and tell them you're not going to put up with it, you know? I have a relative that I've cut out of my life because, his biggest problem was he never grew up. That was the problem. And it's just annoying as fuck, unbelievably annoying guy. And I thought I had to keep him in my life because I grew up with him and he was a part of my life. And then I finally just said, I'll give you the specific here. He was sending me tons of racist stuff through email. If there's ever a guy that needs to be completely beaten to the edge of his life by minorities, it's this guy. Either that or he needs to be hanging off a cliff and have a minority reach around and save his life. I think beating him up would be better, actually. It's sort of what he's earned in his lifetime. But he would just send tons of this ridiculous stuff. And then he would send me sort of official story stuff. You know. Arabs did 9/11, dot, dot, dot. And every once in a while, I'd send him something very scientific back that was sort of undeniably validated by the community on the internet with folks like the Army Corps of, or no, sorry, the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And on one day, he sent me back an email saying, don't send me any of this bullshit. Thing is, he's a giant coward. He's an absolute pussy to the level of maximum pussiness, which is why he's a racist. He's scared of other people of different races. He probably owns 15 guns because he's so fucking terrified of the world. And so at that point, I'm looking at this email and I'm thinking, this guy is a complete fucking oxymoron. You know, he's a paradox unto himself. He's a coward, but he plays tough. Never been in a fight in his life, ever. I mean, I can actually say I've had two fights in my life because of this douchebag creating the problem in the place where we were. And so finally I just told him, I said, you know what? Go fuck yourself. I said, you're the biggest fucking pussy on planet Earth. You've done nothing but reach into my life and try to sabotage my life because you're just a total dick. Here we are, family, and you have no respect for anything. Go fuck yourself. I never want to hear from you again. Ever, ever, ever. I haven't heard from him since, and I can tell you that I have never been more happy in my fucking life, man. When I think about the fact I haven't talked to this guy in 10 years, it warms my heart. It makes me feel amazing. This guy is so completely cut out of my fucking life. I'll never meet his fucking kids. I'll never talk to his wife. At most, his dad is my uncle. He's a good guy. My aunt's a good gal. But they raised a piece of shit. That's how I handle people that make me angry. Constantly. I refuse to be a victim of this dude. Right? So he's got his thing over there, and I'm over here. Good. Dude's got no friends, man. No friends at all. So I'm going to suggest that if you think you're getting quote-unquote offended by someone constantly, which means angered and maybe disrespected, depending on how thin-skinned you've become, you can be thick-skinned and get really pissed off. But I hear a lot of stuff like, disrespect is a very powerful emotion. In my book, disrespect only matters if it is going to compromise the future safety of your being. If you're in a group mentality, like you always hear in prison that disrespecting is the cardinal sin of all sins, other than coming in a pedophile or a rapist, right? But if someone disrespects you in a prison, the way that I've always heard it go is that that will make other people think that you're weak, and then everyone else will start picking on you, and eventually you'll die by 1,000 needles at a minimum, right? Now, moving around the world, I know that's exactly the way it works in real life, too. You show up in a new school, usually we'll have a bunch of this sort of ignorant, weak guys come up to you and try to push you around. You gotta fucking knock them on their ass really quick. Put the fear of fucking God in them. And then it escalates up to the biggest guys in the school. And you gotta somehow gain their respect as well. But the best thing I can say is that instead of waiting for them to disrespect you, you make your own introductions and you respect them. But you stand your ground. You make sure they understand who you are as a person, right? That's the way you keep the world turning really beautifully, right? Don't wait to be interpreted by fellow man. Get up there and present yourself. This is about being offended. For some of you, you'll be caught up in this prize situation. And you'll look back at your past, and I've done it too. We've all done it on a minor, minuscule level, if not a big level. You got angry at someone, you got disrespected. The apology wasn't enough. In fact, you don't even ask for an apology. What you really want is some stuff. If you're in a relationship, hell, you might even ask for sexual things. You might ask for a dinner, a back rub, something. Go mow the lawn, take out the trash, clean up the house. You don't want to do that. You do not want to do that. I've always said that, you create your own hell on this planet. And the minute that someone understands what they've done to you is the minute that they have a little slice of hell. Hell's a strong word. Hell would be killing someone in a fit of rage and then waking up out of your fit of rage, out of your chemical imbalance and realizing, holy shit, I killed someone. They did not deserve to be killed. I have committed the ultimate common law sin that can't be committed. And then even if the community itself finds a way to forgive you, they understand that you had a momentary, moment of insanity. You carry that with you every day you wake up. Like I said, I've got friends of mine who are police officers who unfortunately had to take people's lives in the line of duty. And very subtle stuff. Guy just resisting arrest, or not even resisting arrest. He was throwing a crazy fit in a jail cell in one case and just needed to be restrained because he had to be moved. And he was high as a kite, and he was destroying the room as well. And so he restrained him, and his heart popped because he had really drugged himself up real bad. But five officers now think they killed somebody. He may have had his heart pop just if they just let him continue in the jail cell. We know society has a bunch of developmental problems, and we know that these developmental problems are being, you know, injected into human beings. The whole social justice warrior thing is a hybrid of probably the worst behaviors on planet Earth, and one of the key ingredients is being offended. And the problem is because being offended is really an illusion of, you know, forces working in the mental capacity of a human being. We don't really have any parameters around it. And so it can hybrid into anything it wants to be, including something very dark. The last thing we need is chaos as a fabric in our universe, whereby it makes changes in our planet. Take racism, for example. Racism often falls back on the principle of being offended. But where in life has being offended ever resulted in something that really changed the ultimate behavior of something else? Think about the Muslim invasion of Europe. Various communities, especially in Germany, have cowered down to this invasion. The Sharia law stuff that comes in and says, well, in our world, a woman must be covered up from head to toe. And I mean literally, right? They look out a slit of eyes. And why do they need that shrouding? Because the men aren't taught how to self-control themselves. If they see an ankle, they get a hard on. And they are then justified by their law to do anything they want to that woman because she is sort of beckoned a raping. Now, of course, there's a joke in America that women dress like complete whores, and then they want to be angry at you if you so much as look at them, notice them, or ask them a question as to whether or not they compete in some, you know, workout regimen or something, right? You're not supposed to notice, but they're supposed to flaunt it. They're trying to catch a particular person, perhaps, and if you're not that person, oh boy, they're offended. So we got two extremes here. People dress normal, but one group comes in and says they can't control themselves. So what's happened in Europe? They've actually allowed these folks to invade. And again, if you're Arab, please understand, you know, I spent more than a decade studying a tiny sliver of your culture, and you know there are some beautiful things going on there. And I understand that it's a tiny, tiny percentage is making your whole culture look bad. So please understand that that's the perspective I come from. For me, the whole world started in Egypt by perhaps a race that doesn't exist anymore. Who knows? Well, what happens by classifying it as an offense? Merkel over there, you know, green lights this, don't let girls, you know, swim in pools without wearing full body wetsuits. You know, there's some extreme case like that reported. Sometimes they're just little city ordinances, right? Near those camps where they have sequestered land, sovereign land from the German people, within a halo of that, you're not allowed to behave like you're German anymore. Man, that shit is just unbelievable how Prussianistic the German people are to allow that stuff, which is really strange because German people are normal, progressive people. But somehow, this is being interpreted as an intellectual fucking trophy of behavior. It's weird. But now, by portraying that problem as an offense from one person to another, what's not happening? The people that need to grow the fuck up, the people that need to get out of the Stone Ages, are being essentially quarantined by Merkel and allowed to remain underdeveloped, to restrain the normal behavior of human beings. And so the lesser intellect, the lesser mind, dominates the higher brain, the more civilized people in the world. So what's the goal here? To go backwards in time? But that's what offense allows. It allows a cloudy interpretation of the facts, and therefore the actions to resolve that event are also illogical, cloudy, and chaotic, and it makes no sense. You know, if any of you have seen a bunch of computer equipment hooked to a bunch of other computer equipment and there's wires that go back and forth, you know, it's this port goes to that port goes to this port. And if you do it slowly and correctly, it looks organized. Even if you don't understand what you're looking at, it looks organized, right? In this particular case, if you were to shroud that theory, that metaphor, in a fence, it's just a cloudy ball of weird shit. And you can't tell what wire goes where. Let's talk about apologies for a split second here. Most guys don't like to admit it, but there was a show on TV back in the 70s and 80s, and it was called Happy Days. And Henry Winkler played a character called the Fonz. And he was a cool greaser from the 50s, because the whole thing is set in the 50s. This endearing era of American history. And I really honestly believe it was. The more interviews I do with people in that era, it was probably even better than most of the stuff portrayed in television and movie. Just like the attempts to create caricatures of the 70s, they can't remotely capture it. It's really weird. There's a new series on Netflix that's a throwback to sort of DJing and music and stuff back in the 70s. And it's amazing how the directors and writers couldn't watch a movie like Fame to really figure out what the 70s looked like. Just watch Fame. That's what it looked like. It was made in that era. Rip it off instead of creating something ridiculously impressionistic, right? But the Fonz had something about his character that was endearing and funny. He could not say the word sorry. He would every once in a while, but he had this routine that if you haven't seen the show in your lifetime or you grew up in Europe or whatever, he'd try to say sorry, and he would be struggling to push the syllables together out of his mouth. And the funny thing about that was that every guy sympathized with it, and every girl definitely sympathized with it, because girls seldom heard a sorry from a man, and a man seldom said it. There's sort of a weird code of, mode of operation. I shouldn't say code of ethics. There's a mode of operation with guys, and this has been a joke for a very long time. We don't ask for directions because we are supposed to know everything. We are supposed to be able to protect our family, and knowing where shit is one of those things, right? Now we have Google Maps, so we don't have to ask any questions, so we pretend to be even really intelligent. But a man typically has to learn how to say they're sorry. And I'm not saying women don't have to learn it too, but I'm just going to come at it from my perspective. I was slow with apologies when I was a kid. I don't know how much I ever offended anyone. I'm sure I did. I made them angry. But what I discovered when I started looking at the psychological impact of the moments that I finally started apologizing for things. As a guy, there is that rejection of the syllables coming out of your mouth. And perhaps it's a defect in me. But the nice thing is that once you say it, and you say it heartfelt, and you must say you apologize. And then what I typically do is describe what I think I did wrong. As empathetically as possible, which is to say the words that I believe the other person felt, to itemize their emotions and say, this is probably what that made you feel and understand, you know, even if I didn't mean to do something, which is most of the time, doesn't matter, so I got to apologize, I'll say that I understood how they felt and then apologize. And what right after that happens, if it works, if I feel like the other person really felt better, you know, you have this weird, positive, almost cleansing vibe that goes through your chest. This weight that's lifted off of you. And that's why I think for yourself, there's an apology. Apology has a value to yourself, to your own psyche. The other thing that you will feel, most likely, and then we'll talk about the other person, is that you will feel that your mortal coil, oh shit, I used that word again. Apparently that's a crazy word to use. Your body will feel like you have grown. You will feel like you have matured emotionally. And it's almost bizarre how you you'll feel like you've just had a sort of almost like a superhero upgrade to your body, to your mind. It's nice. Now, the other major, major thing is not you, obviously. I wanted to talk about you first in the apology because that's something we never really talk about. We don't talk about the struggle of becoming a person who can apologize. You don't want to be an apologetic person. And my only other thing is that if you're around someone that you're simply always making them angry to the point you need to apologize, or you're hurting their feelings or whatever, you may want to question your compatibility. Because if you just naturally piss off the other person, there's probably something that's underdeveloped in you, or you're stronger than them and they are weaker, or they are more mature than you. One way or the other, doesn't matter. You know, hopefully they'll make a decision themselves as to whether or not to keep you around. But if you're constantly stepping on someone's toes, you need to find yourself a little retreat in your life, such that you can grow up. Now let's think about if you hurt someone. That's what's really going on, right? You hurt someone, and if you don't say you're sorry, the problem is that that's how they remember you. And depending on how much you do it, they'll start to anticipate that from you. And hey, if they're a masochist, maybe that's what they're looking for. I promise you, there's people who actually seek out that emotion. They have an addiction to an adrenaline. And when they are being treated poorly, they feed on that. Now, I use a word every once in a while. It's a German word called Gestalt. It's sort of a tough word to describe, but what it is essentially a three-dimensional image of the reality that you are in, the moment that you are in. It is all things summed up into one word, meaning all the dimensionality of how you could measure a moment, all five senses plus whatever subconscious stuff's going on. It's your gestalt of that moment. When you are with someone else professionally or personally, you have a gestalt with that person, an overall state that you represent to them. And when you're in love, that's a wonderful state. When you're in a professional relationship, there needs to be respect and trust because you're sharing a journey. You're sharing a goal of a company that's usually related to a profit margin. You want to be able to, in both cases, to second guess each other. To say, oh, well, they're not here, but I need to make a decision. I need to make it now. And I think, I'm pretty sure, that the person that's missing who needs to be here to help this decision be made would make this decision. And then you're correct. That's a beautiful thing. So when we talk about making people angry, and which is really a moment of incompatibility, right? Because if you were exactly the same, no matter what you would do, would make other people happy. So it's where your differences exist that you slip up and there's a moment of confusion. Maybe disrespect, maybe on an advanced level, but definitely anger. And it could be that the other person's not angry at you. They're angry at the moment. They're like, oh my gosh, I recognize that we're incompatible. I don't blame them for being different than me, but I don't like the situation we just got ourselves into. Now, that would be a mature person analyzing a situation. But now, if you are offended, it goes up to the paradigm of reward. A person can't be unoffended very easily, right? Now, you might be able to apologize out of it if the person's, I think, mature. But think about it. In your entire life, when someone's told you that they're offended, there's typically a little stint of pouting that goes on with it. And sometimes we're just so confused and so hurt that apology doesn't really fix things, especially if someone did something to you that caused a permanent change in your life. One of my relatives lost his ring finger because he and his buddy were messing around down in their basement. As the story goes, his buddy threw a hatchet across the room and somehow, man, chopped his ring finger off just above the first knuckle on his ring finger, right? And the guy that had his finger cut off, I don't remember how young he was, but it must have been in high school or below. He's a cool cat. He's a big 6'5" guy, brilliant human being, and he just kind of blew it off and it was okay. But now imagine, you'd feel like crap if you cut your buddy's finger off, one thing. Now today they just sew it back on, but I guess back in the day they just said, oh, well, you just lost a digit, part of a digit. But now what if someone did that to you and they said, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, so sorry. At that point, you're measuring the neglect that fed that moment. I think this guy was actually smart enough to say, well, we're kids, we're being stupid. I understand. That's what that guy did. I asked him once about it, how it happened to him, and he told me, and the whole thing was just laughs and giggles. He was just like, oh my God, we just did this. And I thought, that was inspiring to me. I was like, oh my God, this guy cut your finger off, man. Isn't that a big freaking deal? I want you to consider using the phrase habitual victim. I started saying that about 15 years ago. The habitual victim is the perfect title for the person that uses the concept of, I should say, the abstract concept of being offended to extort prizes of either emotional or physical behavior out of someone, or in extreme cases, physical possessions from someone. Now, what's the classic case? The classic case is the Kobe Bryant classic case that you see in all kinds of pop culture. Someone cheated on someone. It's other than death, it's probably the most offensive thing you can do from one person to another, right? Because it's the most painful emotionally. It's the most disrespectful thing you can do emotionally to another human being. Now, believe me, I've seen a million flavors of this. Sometimes I understand it, sometimes I don't. I'm not judging. I'm just talking about it, all right? So I want you guys to start getting hot blood on me. The one thing that I always try to... because I will make an admission, you know, I've had people, or at least I should say, one person at least cheat on me, and I continued the relationship. Because for me, you know, I think of all human beings as being as flawed as I am. And again, I'm not condoning anything. You build your own life, your own rule set. But it was probably my late 20s, early 30s that I realized that people are going to perpetually make mistakes because they are flawed. There are all kinds of reasons why a person is flawed. Now, there are points in time where we all say it's time to grow up. If your parents raised you to be racist, well, it depends on how you live the remainder of your life. If you live two doors down from your parents, then I can understand that you would remain racist your whole life if they did. But if you move out of this racist region of the world and you move to a region that's not racist, and you're now surrounded by people who understand the value of all people, regardless of, again, something as stupid as the difference in pigmentation, perhaps the way that their bodies grow, etc., I will assure you, in most cases, unless you have people coming in trying to change your world with their differences, as long as they're integrated into society, in many cases, indigenous to your area anyway, they're no different than you, they just look different. Rewards await you for your lack of racism. You will learn something beautiful from them that's cultural to them, as well as have completely normal experiences that you would have had with anyone else of your own race. And I think most of the world understands this. I don't think I'm really preaching to anyone but the choir at this point. But people are flawed. But what is the oxymoron with our society? You know, I'm going to try to stop harping on religion for a little while because I just did a huge doubleheader bashing exercise on it based on truth. But we're taught that, you know, well, in fictitious religion is that man is born with original sin, that man is so flawed that they couldn't stay away from an apple. The metaphor of that is, if you put a flawed being in a perfect world, they will always commit sin. Always. They'll make a mistake. The asinine idea of the Garden of Eden is that you put two error-prone creatures, two creatures that are not perfect, in a garden, and you give them a perfect rule. And then, of course, they break the rule, because infinity will demand the rule be broken. It's just the way it is. And to accuse God of being so short-sighted, to be surprised and angered when the apple's eaten, if he made it that way, then he's an asshole, right? But what's sad about this to me and is that we expect each other to be perfect. And, you know, I think that most of you understand that when we see something that's industrialized, like anything that's built on a factory line, you know, maybe it's a bunch of bottles of beer like Laverne and Shirley, or maybe it's M&Ms coming out of an M&M machine or whatever. We understand that each one of these objects, that although the machine is trying to create perfect replicants of all of the products that are being made by the machine, that they're all different. When you buy eggs, you know they're not all the same. They have flaws. Some crack easy, some don't crack at all. Some have baby chicks inside them. As human beings, we are flawed. We just are, but we don't want to deal with that, because what happens then? We are human, and therefore, if human is flawed, we are flawed, right? We don't like those circular logic associations with the subconscious. And so we hold up this standard that is sort of, in some cases, impossible to fulfill. Again, I'm not trying to condone super bad behavior and have someone walk into court like Natural Born Killers. The third act of Natural Born Killers, where Woody Harrelson does this amazing dialogue about how, you know, it's law of the jungle everywhere and we can kill anybody and that's just the way it is. Obviously, portions of the world believe that, but we need to strive to be a little bit better than the basics, right? Do no harm, right? But for me, in this particular case, the only thing I really cared about was the heart of the person who had a moment of infidelity. And so I asked her, I said, you know, or were you in love with this person? Or did you want to just shag? Like, is that, do you just want the sex? Were you of sound mind? Were you intoxicated? Now, the rest of this will remain private, but I will just definitely say that there was no love. It was a moment. And I said, okay, well, how do you feel now? And they said, very regretful. I feel very bad that I disrespected our union, and it makes me not want to do it ever again. All right. So, instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, instead of doing the traditional Hollywood ending to the movie, throwing all of her stuff on the front lawn, I thought about it for a week or so, you know. I did not ask for favors as a result of it. This is between me and her making a decision, really between me and myself making the first decision as to whether or not to go forward. And I was glad I did, because a bunch of wonderful moments happened after that that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And at that moment in my personal life, I'll just let you in on a secret. For me, life is a bunch of experiences. We're all flawed, and you can choose to have the experiences or not have the experiences. There is no one-size-fits-all solution to all emotional turmoil in the world. There just isn't. And so, in my opinion, it's foolish to rule your life by that emotion set. Now, of course, again, if you make it this far in this particular show, then you have a capacity to think like that. And of course, it is very difficult to find people with the same mindset. I have stopped people in their tracks with the retort that when they told me that they were offended, after I give my apology, and, you know, I have to say, not everyone will get an apology from me just because they were angered by me. At least they won't get the kind that they're looking for in all cases. Because some people are just failing to nut up and be an adult in life, right? For any of you who have raised your, for any of you that have raised your significant other, you will know that you have a choice. At some point, you might say, well, I'm really tired of this game of raising my spouse, raising my boyfriend or girlfriend, because you'll find that it absolutely wears you down as a human being. You can't always be in some educational cycle. It's a stunting cycle. If everyone needs to move stuff forward, like you've seen all these movies where there's refugees leaving where they live to go someplace else. You've seen old historical videos. You've seen fictional ones. And there's a point where you have to pick up every single thing you own, drag it with you, put it on your back. Maybe you have a wagon. Maybe you have a true wagon and, you know, horse and buggy sort of thing. And it's a peril-bound situation, horrible situation. And you know that the only thing you need to do at that point is to focus and get from point A to point B, which represents from danger to safety. Metaphorically, that could be you don't have enough money to pay the bills, and you need to get to a place where you can pay the bills. It could be as simple as that. You know that you have to get the other person to understand it. But if we allow the mechanism of offense to be in the middle of that process, then it's like trying to put your feet on the ground, but all you keep touching is sort of some milky, slippery, spongy stuff. It never quite gives you the feeling it can support your weight to get traction in life and move on. I'm always telling you guys that setting expectations is a very important thing. Let me further that definition here. One of the things I do in new relationships is I will tell the person, look, here's the thing. Until I tell you otherwise, if I make you angry, if I hurt your feelings, if you think I've disrespected you, or any combination thereof, I am being utterly ignorant about who you are as a human being. I didn't mean to. It doesn't mean I should get a blank check for that behavior. But when you feel any one of those three things happen, or a combination thereof, you need to tell me. Be as specific as possible. Believe me, I will apologize for that behavior. And I will do everything I possibly can from that moment forward to not put that combination together. Even if the eventual decision is they were not compatible, I won't disrespect you and hurt you or any of those combinations simply because I think you need to nut up or whatever, right? If I think this is something that should be considered by you, we'll have a conversation about it. And just, you know, again, I always think I'm sort of like your hermit buddy, right? In my experience, you know, I grew up really, really fast. And it wasn't that necessarily a bunch of negative things happened to me that made me grow up. It's just who I was as a human being. Again, I think I was born 30, and then I just kept getting older from that point forward. But when I really took charge of my life at 17 and moved to California with nothing, you know, I was very fortunate to get the right jobs at the right time and really take them seriously. And I had the right skills for my hobbies as a kid that it all worked out. All right. But you have to understand that when I started dating in my 20s and really trying to get serious with a spouse, part of me was saying, well, I bump into girls that were definitely not like me. Who would be like me unless they went through my shoes, right? But I would sit there and make allowances for immaturity. I would say, well, obviously, I know other people who are immature, my buddies and stuff. And so if I bump into a girl that's immature, she's acting like her age. The worst calculation I would ever make to myself was to say that they would grow up like me, which was stupid. But, you know, the amount of stuff that I accomplished by, say, my mid-20s, now that I look back, I know guys that are in their 40s that haven't done what I've done by the age of the mid-20s. A lot of people in their 50s that haven't done it. People in their 70s that haven't done what I've done by the age of 25, 30 years old. And I'm not in the slightest way trying to showboat on this show. What I'm trying to make the point of is that I grew up very intense. And I got the rewards of being very intense in my life. Sort of like, you know, Steve Jobs was very intense with his life and did not live a normal life. The circles by which he surrounded himself with, the people he surrounded himself with, were vetted for being that intense as well. But he had lots of money to meet more people, you know, than I did. I was just bumping into normal human beings, right? Now, eventually, through age and through the attrition of trial and error and heartbreak and what have you, I ended up bumping into people that were naturally at least as mature as me sometimes in a professional sense, but at least in a social sense. And it really took the edge off. Like, I started enjoying my socializing after 40 a lot more than I enjoy my socialism before 40. But now I'm taking my 40s to the next level, being even more intense, more aggressive. If you have a similar situation in any avenue of your life, you might find yourself in a situation where you are not as understood as other people. Because perhaps you're more complex. Maybe you're more intense, not that complex. But it's alien to other human beings, right? We're at a state in the world, and I've said this in previous episodes, but on this subject, we are at a state now where we are trying to... There are people who are trying to engineer society to their benefit, right? Political candidates that are trying to live off of emotional juice. In America, we elected a president, Barack Obama, based on hope. His poster said hope, an emotion that doesn't exist. This is like try and just like being offended. But they are now using these subtextual things, these sort of abstract concepts, to get laws passed. There are now dozens of laws around the world that are trying to make it illegal for you to disagree with someone else. You must like the same thing that the public likes as a whole. For those of you who aren't familiar with fascism, there couldn't be a bigger degree of fascism in this world. Regardless if we dress in all white robes and shave our heads to look the same, our insides are being litigated into some common stream of thought. Now, I could see that some people might look at that and say, well, that is a kooky thing we're doing, but overall, political correctness will triumph, right? Now, we know from inquisitions in Europe that they can pound into the psyche of man a belief in fiction. By threatening your life, they can pound it into you and pound it into you. But let me tell you something about the human mind and the human body and the human genome. As long as we keep them out of our gene sequences, our protein patterns, our DNA sequences, right? As long as we don't let them genetically engineer us. And I'm not sure they could get a hold of the actual genes I'm talking about. Man will always seek sovereignty and freedom. There's an average mean that is encoded in us as beings, regardless of how you believe we were created, that will fight injustice. It will. So everything that is wrong in the world, in my opinion, needs to go through a very natural cycle of trial and error, of acceptance and rejection, for us to slowly over time modify those sequences in our systems, such that we grow up more tolerant, right? There's all these really cute videos online of children playing with each other. And you'll see two kids of a different race hug each other because they know nothing different. All the child sees is the beautiful soul, the love in someone else. Sure, they get their little hearts broken every once in a while, and they cry. They cry for the dumbest stuff sometimes, according to us adults. But they're just little tiny throbbing ids. And there's a lot of us adults that are exactly the same way. We talk about rebuilding the pyramid from the bottom up, right? If you think about the mortar between the bricks, there's a couple of metaphors that are wonderful. If we are the bricks to the wall, or to the construct of the pyramid, right? The Great Pyramids don't have mortar. They're just a bunch of bricks stacked up on each other. I'm going to say that we as human beings have developed a mortar, which is sort of our emotional aura, our maturity halo. And this surrounds us and it binds us, it either creates repulsion or attraction. And for this reason, for this very basic reason, we have to ensure that we have the strongest possible bond between us. We have to. Because there's a lot of frequency that needs to transmit between us, a lot of hive minding that needs to happen, right? Now, unfortunately, on the internet, there's a lot of folks that are abusing some really good paradigms. And there's some amazing people who have the balls to make videos to call these people out. And believe me, I respect that. What we have to make sure is that when people bring good things together in a negative way to make people try to cancel out, to maybe even take things and trivialize them. Again, I will repeat something I said in the past because I think it's sort of on point here. I was raised and I fell for the whole Charles Manson demonization of hippies when I was a kid. The reason why that guy was blamed for the Tate murders, it's because he knew the women that were the family that was murdered. He wasn't there. He didn't do anything. But he was incarcerated, and I think the women have been released now, which is just nuts, right? It was because they needed a huge demonization of the hippie movement, because it was a movement that was largely ineffective at the end, but up to that point, it was sort of a hive mind that war sucks. That hating each other sucks. That love was the way to live. So they needed to get rid of that guy. By proxy, there was a lot of things that were legitimate about that movement that got demonized as well. Like love. If you didn't buy into a war economy was a good economy, you were a hippie. And you were to be chastised. Now, I didn't really I lived during that bubble, but I didn't live in it because I was raised by two parents that didn't have a single gene in them that was hippie-based, right? But just as a really silly example, you know, I looked at crystal-hugging people, even tree-hugging people, and I thought, I went right down the line of how ridiculous those people were. So your tree-hugging people were trying to keep clear-cutting from happening all over the world, to find a different way to build homes that didn't rely on wood. You know, even just chopsticks in Asia have caused amazing clear-cutting over there. And now, South America has sold their forests off. Brazil and Argentina have sold their forests off to Asia to chop them all down. Unbelievable. You haven't seen clear-cutting yet, let me tell you. But crystals are very interesting, right? Crystals work. Not shitty little plastic ones, but real quartz crystals. How do they work? Well, they're a crystalline structure. You put any frequency into them that's chaotic, and they have no choice but metabolize that random frequency into a constant frequency. Well, we know that the pineal glands and all the glands in your body, put it that way, from top to bottom, react to frequencies. They're activated by frequencies. They just are. They get harmonized and they activate. We don't understand in the 21st century what they understood 5,000 years ago about these glands, but there are many religions that rely on them, right? Buddhism, Hinduism, ancient Egyptian, and we're resurrecting and creating new religions today based on them as well. There's music you can buy to meditate to that resonates at the various frequencies of your chakras. The wind chi. But what happens? People take these valid paradigms and they push them into paradigms that aren't any good, that are silly, that are psyopy and shilly. And so it takes something good and it makes it look bad. And that's where I think the fabric of society has to gain control over this mechanism called being offended. There is no such thing. There's being hurt emotionally, and there's being hurt physically. The solution is to gain understanding with a cause that made this happen to you. I heard a guy on the internet actually beautifully say something very simple, which I want to repeat, and I don't remember the guy's name, otherwise I'd say it, but he made a video and he said, look, there's this big push for socialism in the world, and he said, our government is never more efficient than the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles here in the United States. He said, the last thing we need to do is give them more money to control more of our lives under this inability to keep bureaucracies anything other than a crushing force of inertia towards progress, right? The medical system in America has turned into an absolute catastrophe since we had global health care. The premiums are out of control, like I've said several times, and the coverage is going down. The deductibles are really high. It's horrible, and that's what government does. So the last thing we want to do is litigate the interiors of our mind through political correctness, through this bullshit about you have to like what I like, and that's law. You have to believe what I believe, and that's law. It's already bad enough that we have false history enforced by laws all over the world. But what gets rid of this need to do such a thing? The answer is nut up and stop being so sensitive. If the people that constantly try to extort things out of you emotionally or physically, or possession-wise, right, which would be physically, if they can't find a spouse because that behavior is not acceptable, because we've all matured out of the game of being, of dealing with people who are habitual victims, then guess what's going to happen to their behavior? They're the people that need to hug the tribe more than anyone. So when they find themselves utterly ejected from the tribe, they'll change. Yes, this is a teardrop of lamenting in the sea of reality. So it's easier said than done. It's idealistic, if there ever was something that I would ever cover to be idealistic. But again, we got to try. Got to teach our kids this stuff, our significant others, our friends, whatever. But especially ourselves, right? Live by example. Whatever your hero does is what you want to do. And that's the truth. I was probably in my early 30s when I heard that Groucho Marx said that a funny person doesn't have to use any dirty words. And I think it was Jay Leno that actually said it. And I think Jay may have slipped up a few comedy bits that used a few dirty words, but the guy made a point to never write any comedy that used a dirty word. And I thought that was interesting, because all my other heroes definitely used dirty words, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, etc. But, you know, I always thought Groucho Marx, I watched the Groucho Marx show when I was a kid. That was the reruns that we would watch in Kansas. And he never swore. Animal Crackers doesn't have any dirty words in it. And my God, are those guys funny. The whole set of brothers and the Marx brothers, absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. Using talent to entertain. So I look up to that. You know, I swear on this show like an idiot. It's kind of my style, I guess. But I don't celebrate it as much as you might think. So thank you, feel me. If you made it this far, thanks for listening, of course. If you dig this show, please subscribe. If you dig this particular episode, please like. You know, I still haven't had time to really conquer the website, deepthoughtsradio.com. It's not quite what I want it to be at this exact recording, which is October 2nd, 2016. Not sure when this episode will go out. I will say that the comments are on fire. I can't keep up anymore. So, again, if I've read your comment, I've clicked the like button from the Deep Thoughts account. What I'll typically do is loop back when I have time and try to comment on and listen to everything you guys say, because it's so enlightening. I know I just keep repeating that at the end of every episode, but that's because it's true. I wish I had the memory to remember all of your names and call you guys out and, you know, mention your comments. Anyway, thanks for stopping by. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.